I trust I can rely on your vote.
Well, I don't know.
We're going to work on you. We're going to fasten the electrodes and up the voltage until we get them.
It's not you. It's more my fear of controlling freedom of speech has never led to a positive outcome for society.
The glorious, gorgeous, nerve-inducing cold call. What's happened to it, Ryan? Do you think that it is an archaic business practice that has literally been turned into fossil and prehistoric ash in the same way that those giant lizards were once called dinosaurs are? Or do you think it's the more that technology tries to replace it in sales, the more relevant it will in fact become? I've given you two extremes
there. Yeah, no, you have. Mm. I think we're in the business relationship. Just so people know, what do you do? A few things. Five companies, soon to be one.
Yeah. Look, it's so I'm one of two owners of Build People. I started the company by myself, I think 11 and a half years ago. And I think 6 years into the journey, bought my sister Jo Wilson into the business. I kind of needed a hand at that point. Jo was absolutely the right person. She's got a wealth of recruitment experience, in fact, more so than me. And in fact, she got me into recruitment. So her coming to work for me some years later on or work with me some years later is pretty cool. But Build People is a search recruitment business that was fundamentally started to work with companies building merchants and companies selling building supplies. So it was very, very niche, Ryan. And I'd seen that opportunity in another company that I was working for to head off out by myself and specialize, and have worked very hard to become what I like to think is the market leader in that market segment in terms of my knowledge of the key candidates in the segment, because that's really what it's all about. You've got to know who the good people are already. So, you know, it's Build People has morphed over the last 5 years to not only move outside the sales and executive roles that we were initially hunting out, to include more or less every single role inside an organization, from, you know, warehousing and manufacturing staff right up to the CEO and even board appointments. So that's been the focus over the last 5 years, has become more of a
one-stop shop.
Yes. The old one-stop shop. Drive in, get everything, leave happy. But it's really been about mainly going out to our existing client base that only used us for a certain, you know, for certain key roles, and then you know, applying the same level of service throughout their business. And we're still in the process of doing that.
Makes sense. I mean, I'm only new to this business game, so I'm sort of winging it. I mean, yes. I guess you get to certain levels of winging it, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, there's definitely professionally winging it.
It's, yeah.
No, absolutely. I think the whole thing is to be winging it and creating the impression that you're doing no such thing.
Yeah, like the old swan thing. The feet are going crazy, but you're elegantly flying.
Absolutely.
Well, so from what other people tell me, it's like if you can increase the lifetime value of your clients, you know, that's a good way to go. So imagine, is that what drove it? Like, you know, hey, you've got this thing, existing problem you solved.
Yes.
It's a lot easier to solve the next problem to someone that already trusts you and know you can solve it. Is that what led to you suddenly being like, oh, yeah, well, let's go back? How you been, Dave? You remember that role we did in 2006?
Yeah. Look, so I am inherently and utterly competitive.
Oh, yeah.
So, and when you own a recruitment company and you see one of your clients, a relationship you've worked very hard to build and prove yourself in, you know, advertising through one of your competitors, or someone even worse, someone that you wouldn't even consider a competitor because you know the standard of their work, that is there's something that I can't fathom and or, you know, just let go in that scenario, because you know, I want my client to have the absolute best. And you know what it's like when you see someone making a mistake with another supplier or something like that, and you know how it's going to end. And I think that it's that competitiveness that's made me go, you know, look, we need to...
dominate. We need to put them in their place.
Well, I quite like, I mean,
you give that aura a little bit.
Yeah, dominate is such a great word.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, from a business perspective, right? And in New Zealand, we're very fond of throwing around the term, you know, market leader, market leader, market leader, and I think that people automatically connect that to percentage of the market. Oh, they've got 80% of the market, so they must be the market leader. But what if you look at that through the you know, the microscope of sustainability or, you know, culture or, you know, impact of products or you know, any range of things? You know, if that company is, you know, their impact on the overall infrastructure of the country, as an example, you know, they don't pay much tax and they're polluters and they've got a terrible culture and you know, the company is hell-bent on the enrichment of its shareholders and nothing more, but they've got 80% of the market. Market leader be damned, you know. The market is getting smarter. Consumers are getting smarter and making, you know, better choices or choices based on what they perceive as being important to the planet.
What is your point on that? ESG? What are your thoughts on that whole, hey, you know, clean, green, got to have this amount of people on your board? Do you want to get cancelled?
Can you get cancelled in New Zealand? Are we big enough for anyone to care?
Yeah, I mean, you could. Yeah, everyone could.
I think that, look, I think it's... it's probably a sad indictment on our country that as a white male, I'm probably much less likely, you know, at my age, I'm much less likely to be cancelled than anyone else in New Zealand, let's be honest.
You reckon? I think the opposite.
I'd have to work pretty hard.
To be cancelled?
Yeah.
To I mean, you're doing well.
Yeah.
Because you're a middle-aged white
not
man.
Not cancelled yet. Woohoo!
No, but like, isn't that the group that people like to cancel? It's more if you're a minority that you would be...
I think that
more protected from cancellation, but not as well off in life in terms of opportunities.
Well, I'm fascinated by cancellation because behind anything like that, you know, kind of a societal, catchphrase, which basically, which is really basically about a bunch of people deciding that you're wrong or incorrect or have said something offensive and then anti-bully you to the point of you not being able to societally engage in the way that you did previously. So it's kind of you said something that discriminates people and now we're going to thoroughly and utterly discriminate you, but also in a way that's probably going to affect your professional relationships, your standing, your... So, you know, breaking into that whole cancellation piece, it's kind of like, speaking succinctly, I think that someone in my position getting cancelled is probably more able to, you know, withdraw and then reconnect and use the people that know them to continue to succeed. So I think it's about business contacts and about look, it's pretty darn easy for someone in New Zealand to be struck off, told off, cancelled, whatever, and then just go down the road and start another business doing exactly what they were doing to a whole different, you know, and deal with a whole different bunch of people.
Interesting. Do you, because, you know, there's that whole 1 degree of separation thing. So it's like, I think I had 40 coffee meetings the last few weeks and 20 of them talked about Stan Henry, the attention seeker.
Right.
So you think about like the impact, if you fuck over a whole lot of people and they talk about, and then I also had 3 separate coffees about disgruntled employees that I didn't plan to target them, but there was a company they all talk shit about.
Yeah, okay.
What was the, like, with Auckland, it's like, I mean, people will forgive, people please here, but I don't know if, I guess you could just start again.
I think it's very easy to, and I think there's a range of people. I mean, I could point you to, look, I think being cancelled socially I mean, if you were a newscaster or a musician or a rugby player or something like that, then counselling, that's counselling.
Probably need it.
Yeah, counselling and counselling. Yeah, everyone that's involved in it all needs it. So, you know, counselling could be catastrophic.
Mm.
You know, people have killed themselves because they've, you know, said one dumb thing and then been totally ostracised and, you know, because I think it's pretty difficult to comprehend the sort of absolute shit that humans send other humans through the safety of their computer, you know?
Yeah.
It's, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, words kill is not a joke, you know? It's true, everyone. But it's, you know, and people think that it's, gosh, I'm getting grim and dark now, aren't I?
Yeah, but, safe space.
Yeah, and then Jeremy took them down the suicide road.
I did a whole podcast on suicide, believe it or not. So by all means, bring it back. It was
I think what I'm really doing, I think there's probably a stream of consciousness there from me because I'm so fascinated and horrified with the whole idea of being cancelled.
What on that suicide thing? Because, you know, I think it sounded like 20,000 people in New Zealand attempt it, 600 odd do it. More men do it, more women attempt it. What are your thoughts on what leads a person down that road and what can we do to help them?
I don't know that I'm really qualified to comment on that, because I think in every single case that I've known, in other words, you know, my kind of circle or extended circle of people, when somebody has taken their own life, it's always been a huge surprise. And what that means is it's clear to me when I consider that fact, that we haven't normalized it in any way, shape or form so that people understand it as being, you know, something that if it was normalized and spoken about and there was openness and we actually had a fully capable and engaged mental health system where people got good, great, fantastic help and didn't feel, you know, you know, you could flip the coin on it and go, if someone's made a decision that they just don't want to be around anymore, it's, you know, society clings pretty darn desperately to life, right? Like we really, really do.
Mm.
And in the last 50 years especially, we've kind of gone, no one should die. Certainly in the Western world, you know. And I think that it's, you know, I read a really interesting piece recently where, you know, somebody was, you know, putting a lot of work into ensuring that, you know, the media and the you know, the health profession didn't use the term committed suicide, that they actually said, you know, killed themselves, you know, or death by own hands or whatever, because the whole sort of committed suicide, you know, they committed suicide. It's a pretty archaic term, right?
Yeah. Committed.
And instead of saying committed suicide, let's just say they bloody killed themselves, man.
Mm.
You know, there's 600 people have chosen to kill themselves rather than remain in society or with their families and their loved ones. So is that a mental health issue or is it a societal issue? You know?
Yeah, it's tricky because, you know, it's been around a long time, even when we're living in communities. There might be a greater propensity now. I think people are less equipped to navigate their emotions just because of their dependency on dopamine. You know, you get your instant gratification from the age of 10 now with your phone and reaching out. And even relationships, like in your 20s, transitory, you're scrolling between different people.
Oh, yeah.
and the illusion of choice. You know, you think because you got so much choice, you're happier. In actual fact, it's the opposite.
Mm.
They did it with these paintings. They had two groups. One group could be, you could change your painting in 6 months. The other group, you can't change. Which group do you think was happier?
That's a really interesting question. That's a really interesting question.
No choice or lots of choice? I know the answer.
Yeah, I can imagine it would have been no choice, surely. Yeah.
So you think about that. So you got these superficial transitory relationships.
You've
got this consistent instant gratification in all things media. And then anytime you're faced with your emotions, you can just hide from them in a meeting room, the social encounters.
Mm.
So I imagine that has a cost.
And if you think about the reverse, you're constantly exposing yourself to not only negative, messages, but constantly, we all know someone that's been bullied online.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's almost impossible to stop looking at your phone. If someone says, "Oh, just turn it off, just ignore them," that's impossible because the chemicals in your brain are telling you that you need to keep checking that thing, right?
Mm.
So it's that's a very, very dangerous thing. It really, really is. I think that people are very quick to go, X amount of people have, taken their own lives, and that's a lot. And it's a real problem. Because they compare you immediately to, this country and that country, and you know, the old bar graph comes out and there's ratios and all those sorts of things. But it kind of makes me wonder, what was it like 100 years ago in, an industrial part of London, as an example, with immense poverty and filth and all those sorts of things, did people just, everyone was dying at the ripe old age of 38 anyway. Mm. Did they kill themselves? No, they, died of tuberculosis or, along with their entire family and,
drowned in the lake.
Yeah. So my wife always says, "Hey, remember the good old days when everyone died at the ripe old age of childbirth?" Because it was literally like so many women just died at childbirth,
Yeah, that's crazy.
And, so it was kind of, I don't know, it's... I think that as humans, we have put a great deal of time and energy and effort and spent more money than we've spent on anything else ensuring that we are constantly and always and utterly connected to anything we want.
Mm.
We have literally laid the world open in all its greatness and in all its depths of evil and given it to kids. And adults and people that are either mentally incapable of being able to handle that or, not strong enough to investigate both extremes, right? And why should you not? The world is here and it's infiniteness and you've got, 80-odd years to get around and do and see as much as you want to. And... we haven't really gone, are we ready for this? Are we up for this? And what does it mean? It's a point I've debated heatedly at a couple of, dinner parties. Bottle of wine in, here I go. and immediately it's kind of like, so I believe that in the same way that we've all kind of agreed on, quite a few things in society, right, that are kind of cool and kind of aren't, Like, I think we all kind of universally agree, with the exception of some elements of the church, that pedophilia is totally and utterly off the table.
Mm.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, not cool, guys. And everyone, everywhere, more or less, you know, say 98% of people globally have gone, yep, absolutely, shouldn't have sex with kids. It's really bad. Yeah, and everyone's gone, yeah, totally. So, you know, and everyone more or less around the entire world's gone, definitely can't use the N-word. Not cool. Not cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's gone, yeah, cool, I'm down with that. Seems fair enough. You probably drive on the left-hand of the road, left-hand side of the road. Yeah, totally cool, you know? You can't walk into a bank with a gun and rob it. You can't, you know, walk up to the street to someone and do this. So why can't we say the internet? If you go on the internet and you do these things, every single ISP in your country will be notified and you will be banned from using the internet. Like, it's pretty simple, man. You know, you get caught drunk driving three times, you're not allowed to drive anymore. You know, like you are literally, that's time for you to go to the big house and think about things, you know?
Okay.
Come back and join the rest of us when you're prepared to be a good boy, you know? Like, it's, so why do we not, why can't we have this, these universal, you know, hey guys, we've kind of come together. And I don't know, is it a United Nations thing and then everyone gets upset when China gets up and walks out and goes back to China and just goes and bees really massive and,
yeah,
you know, does their own thing, which is cool. But it's, you know, like,
what are you saying? Are you saying ban people from the internet if they do bad on the internet? Is that what you're saying?
No, so I'm saying, right, okay, so
I don't quite get it.
So we can agree that there's certain
things that are fucked. Yeah, there's, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. There's, and we've all kind of come to fairly decent universal conclusions about what's cool and what's not.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm with you.
Like, if someone is online suggesting to another person, oh, you know, hey, you should probably go and kill yourself, you know, blah, 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 blah. Dude, like, no.
Yeah, not good.
But then, of course, people say, well, who would govern that? Well, I guess the same people that make up laws.
Oh, keyboard warriors.
Kind of accepted. Oh, keyboard warriors.
Is that what you're talking about? Like, someone that says fucked up shit on the internet with no consequence?
Oh, totally.
Oh, okay. Absolute, we're coming after them.
Yeah, absolute scumbags.
Are we? And then we ban them from the internet for how long? A lifetime ban if they say a comment that's like, and then who decides?
Well, this is a really interesting thing. Look, I haven't fully concocted and concluded my business plan on this yet.
Oh, haven't you? You know, fuck, what are you doing?
Yeah, mate? Jeremy Wilson Censorship Limited. But I'm just kind of like, you know, like, it's really interesting. Like, going back to people taking their own lives, there's, as I understand it, many, many documented cases of people doing it because they're just being totally bullied online.
Yep.
Incessantly and utterly and completely, you know, vilified, demonized, you know, abused. And they've gone, man, because I'm not getting the dopamine from this device that I'm addicted to, everything's pretty gray and black. Now, if that person's already has anxiety or is depressed or, you know, then you've basically, haven't you aided and abetted?
Mm. Wow, okay. So is that your second business? Build people and stop them being crushed.
Yeah, no, I just think that
There should be accountability for cruelty.
Yes.
Oh, that's valid.
Yes.
I mean, the tricky part is, you know, the whole freedom of speech thing. It's like navigating someone's perception of harm and their right to speak. You know, at what, and then how do you make clear parameters on that? So, like, Facebook's tried, Twitter's tried.
Mm.
It's a real art, and then, you know, you have these different, you know,
yeah,
agencies getting involved as well, being like, you can't say this.
The thing is that you are already being actively tracked and targeted in terms of, you know, content, marketing, messaging.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you say to your mate, you know what, mate, I think I'm going to go to Bunnings in the weekend and buy a new bloody, you know, I'm going to go and buy a new wheelbarrow. You know, and 3 minutes later you get a, you know.
Came first though, the chicken or the egg? Did it make you think about the wheelbarrow or did you tell it that there's a wheelbarrow?
I'm just subliminally whispering wheelbarrow.
Well, do you think about why you believe what you believe? Like, why are we using diamonds that are worthless? Why are we saying diamonds are a girl's best friend and we buy them to get engaged? Because some company started a marketing campaign way back when and decided, or Michelin star. Do you know where that came from?
Yeah, that's really interesting, eh?
Tire company, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why do we, and then breakfast is the most important meal of the day?
Yeah.
Meat and eggs.
Yeah. Do you know where the Nobel Peace Prize, the name for that, came from? Alfred Nobel, the Swedish engineer that invented dynamite, the thing that has killed, the single one thing that has killed more people on the world, on Earth ever, and still is, because dynamite was the precursor to pretty much everything that blew people up, and more or less the most successful munition that's ever been utilized by anyone to kill other people. And he's the Nobel Peace Prize. Hello. Wow, here you go, person that's done good things for society. Have an award named after a guy that's literally fucking killed everyone. Oh, rat. I wonder if there's any hypocrisy in there.
Yeah. Well, you got some feelings, bro.
There's so much to question.
Oh, yeah. Do you just give up and whereas, don't?
People would rather sit down after Shortland Street and, they're meat and three veg and send 60 messages to people about,
climate change.
Just bullying people.
Got you.
I mean, you look at the, at the rancid vitriol that Jacinda Ardern received in her entire, and not just people expressing their views or opinions on things that she may have done right or wrong, but threatening the lives of her children, saying horrific things about her appearance, you know?
So you're going to run for office or what? We coming for them?
Hell yeah. I trust I can rely on your vote.
Well, I don't know.
Right, we're gonna work on you. We're gonna fasten the electrodes and up the voltage until we get them.
It's not you, it's more my fear of controlling freedom of speech has never led to a positive outcome for society. Because who determines the truth? And if you control speech, then you control the masses. If you control the masses, you have too much power.
So we've been controlling action, movement, finance, everything around you is already controlled.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not talking that you're doo-doo-doo-doo in the Matrix. I am, although if Trinity wants to stop in and say hi, I'm more than happy to be in the Matrix. But
if you're listening.
Yeah. God bless Trinity. But, it's everyone says, well, where does the buck stop?
Mm.
But we've let the buck stop with everything else.
So just keep going, fuck it. Do you think absolute power corrupts absolutely?
Oh, there's no doubt. And you only have to look at human history for that.
So how do you, that's the challenge with censorship. Because it is subjective. Like, there is some clear things of like, hey, don't, like, there are freedom, there are laws, things you can't break now. It's like you can't do an assembly of violence or whatever, or I can't remember all of them, but there's something that exists, you know what I mean?
An assembly of violence.
Yeah, you can't be like, awesome. Yo, let's go, up to the Capitol.
Yeah, I remember there was an assembly, about a 30-person rumble in my assembly at school once. That was an assembly of violence.
Did you play Bull Rush?
Eh? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Should we bring it back?
Man, I used to play Bull Rush with my kids.
Well, you win.
Oh, always. Every single time. Shot. Oh, man, I dropped those suckers, yeah.
Well, you're competitive too, Sid. What are your thoughts on letting kids win? Do you think participation medals or just fucking beat them to the ground? Well, not beat them, but you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, no, you've got to... you've got to... So I never really... People started with their kids... from the moment their child first falls over and they go running over and, oh, sweetie, darling, love, and pick them up and bandage them and hug them and cuddle them for half an hour while it sobs and carries on. And then, we'd better go home. Sophia's hurt her knee, Yeah. Whereas if you just kind of,
drop kick, like.
Yeah.
Bull rush.
I think that whole thing is really fascinating because, both of my kids were tough guys anyway, if they fell over. But you'd more or less ignore them, like it was their problem, unless it was actually proper bad, like, oh, gosh, that's okay, we're going to need to, that's maybe the A&E. But otherwise, you don't make it a big deal,
Yeah.
So your kid's fallen off something or, hurt themselves somehow or run into something, just deal with it. You know?
Well, that's valuable because, like, you think the cost of being an overprotective parent is they're cuddled and then they get hit by life.
Yeah.
And they're naive, so then someone capitalized on that naivety.
Yes.
Mum, I was running around a house and I accidentally headbutted the corner of the brick house, split my head open. Mum's like, have a bath.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was, I'm just going to slap a wet cloth on that and we'll see how it looks tomorrow, you know? So, and it was that sort of thing. Oh, here's a glass of Coke. And you're like, sweet, everything's going to be cool. And you weren't. You're a bit cross-eyed and, you know, and you couldn't quite find your way around for a couple of days, but you come right. And that was the thing about Kiwi kids is that growing up, it was just like a cacophony of cuts and concussion and, you know, like a really, really, really interesting thing about the impact of the fact that children are not allowed to go off and do anything alone. Like, I remember from the age of about, when did I get my first bike? When did you get your first bike? You would have been like six, right?
Five or six? Yeah, we'll go with that. I don't know.
And all of a sudden, you were gone.
Yeah, now, no training wheels. Fuck that.
Yeah. You were gone. Oh, yeah. You know, I was the same.
You had tassels. Don't lie. You would have those fucking pink silver tassels with a pink bike.
No, man. See, I'm older than you. So I had a Chips helmet.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. See, already you're like, oh, yeah.
Nah, no idea.
What's this old guy on about? So in the 80s, young person, which was a time on Earth hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
We had these things called televisions, and they had two channels. One was TV1 and one was TV2. There was no mystery to it. And in numerical order, even, to make it simple.
Yeah.
And after the news, on a Tuesday night, I think, because you had to watch the news. Oh, yeah. Welcome to One News. Tonight we talk about the All Blacks and the All Blacks again. And you would change the channel to watch this incredible American show, which was two men, a white one and a black one, working together in harmony.
Oh, beautiful.
Catching criminals on the back of rad old Harley Davidsons because they were the California Highway Patrol. And the pseudonym for that is Chips. So Chips... So I can sing you the theme tune if you like.
Go on, you want.
See how grandiose it is? Yeah. I've drawn you in already.
Wow, I'm inspired now. I might need to look out these grandiose.
Oh, man, you need to check out Chips.
But and you had a helmet.
You'll be hooked. Yeah. And then when Chips ended, they came out with this incredible thing called Knight Rider.
Yeah.
Now, you will know David Hasselhoff because you definitely grew up watching Baywatch.
Yep.
And what's your favorite thing about Baywatch out of interest?
The plot. For sure.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah.
No, the car, right? The car that's like a computer, like it's smart. A smart car.
Oh,
is it?
Yeah.
Knight Rider.
Your car spoke to you.
Yeah.
And if you pressed a button, you could shoot the guy next to you out the roof.
I always make a joke with that with my mate. Every time she's in the car and she's not being very funny, I push the exit button like it's going to eject her out, but it doesn't work. So if anyone can hit me up and know how to fix it.
Yeah. If someone can sneak into Ryan's car... Put a couple of massive springs
with some dynamite
and a self-opening roof panel.
That'd be beautiful
in the passenger seat.
Yeah, you're quite knowledgeable on cars. Are you passionate about the whole driving thing? Because your car's pretty fancy. I don't know what it is, but
yeah. It's a big angry German, but it's cars are great.
Yeah,
cars are magnificent.
What does a car mean to you?
Something that is uniquely and utterly mine.
Mm.
A car is one of those few things that you own that is, if you think about it, you've chosen it for whatever variety of reason, and it is succinctly and utterly yours. And you have complete, you can whip that beast within an inch of its life, you know, or you can mollycoddle it and polish it.
You made that sound so sus.
Yeah. You can lock it in a dark room for years and look at it from time to time. I mean, look, it's...
I'm going to read about you in the paper.
But you know what? Yeah. Do you read the paper?
Nah, I don't read. I stopped.
Okay.
Yeah, I just ask people stuff.
It is overrated. During COVID, I made a conscious decision to remove all media from my life.
Oh, well, now and you're I've on been it. You so can't much- watch this.
Yeah.
You can't watch this.
Oh, and I never will.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Oh, as soon as I leave this room, this will be forgotten. I'll be on to the next thing.
I believe you, though.
You've got me thinking about my car now. I just want to go for a drive.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. No, look, it's...
Wait, what would your car say about you?
Oh, he would say that I am uniquely divine. that I am determined in my mindset, completely and utterly cognizant of my abilities. I'm absolutely comfortable in my own skin, and God, he smells good.
Apparently someone looked at me like, you look like someone that smells. This was someone said to me recently. It's probably valid. But yeah, no.
Someone said that to you recently.
Yeah, and it wasn't a comment. It was to my face.
I'm pretty sure you can cancel them for that.
Yeah, this is
deeply
me.
Offensive.
I'll plug their name and then we'll cancel them.
Yeah, just get them to add a comment about your sexual orientation, color of your skin, how they're deeply offended by your use of pronouns.
Oof.
Like, have you been to school? Do you remember being at school and your teacher going on and on and on about pronouns? There's nothing offensive about a pronoun.
Oh, you're off. Go on. You really want to be cancelled, eh? Like, there's at least 10 controversial things you said in the last.
No, that is something I don't want.
You don't want to be cancelled?
Yeah, I'm still actually thinking about what my car would say about me. It would say, why is he so mean?
Interesting. What would be...
Actually, I'm horrified by what my car would say about me. I'd rather that you spoke to, like, ex-girlfriends than spoke to my car.
Yeah, no, valid. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know where to go from cars, but I always wondered that, eh? It's like, I think of, like, how do you sell something? And I don't like products because I'm a hippie that lived in a tent.
Mm.
So I've worked, but I've learned to be more capitalistic, you know? I'm finding my way.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. No,
I mean, how do you expect to be welcomed in society if you haven't, you know?
They're pretty nice.
Get on the menu, son. Yeah.
People just give me stuff, eh? I don't know what it was. If you just don't give a fuck and you take an interest to people, your life's just solved.
Man, if you look around and think about, like, in this room alone, you know?
There's a hoarder.
You look at all the things, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
The hoarder's not in here still. Where are you? Show yourself.
Yeah, he's
Is he
hidden.
Behind those boxes? Or
His name's Greg Moyle.
But it's there's so much stuff in the world, you know?
Mm.
Back to cars for a second.
What
I really like about cars is that they are so also uniquely fittable with.
Fittable.
You know?
Okay, you can change them if you're bored of them.
Oh, you can do anything you want. You know, you can definitely. I mean, man, I thought Pimp My Ride was a documentary.
Oh, wow. You like that? Would you do the fucking. What would you get put in? Would you get like the TV and would you get a van kitted out? That wasn't a good example.
I think putting a TV into a car is deeply offensive to the car, right? Because the car's like, am I not enough?
Interesting.
You know?
We need some more protests for the rights of cars. Like, what would you... If you were to picket sign the misuse of cars, what would you protest?
Yeah, I don't know. When you said it, I immediately thought about the French farmers driving around Paris in their tractors.
Yeah, good stuff.
And if you think about it, that's so clever because you're immediately cognizant of the fact that that is a farmer. Like, if there was ever a vehicle that indicated the person that's going to be in it, other than a silver Prius around Auckland City, is a tractor.
You can't just plug that. That was well played though, because you didn't say anything incriminating. You just voiced a car, didn't you?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, listeners, what is your first instincts on that, listeners, if you're watching this? But okay, so cars says something about a person.
If they say so much about a person, if you see a 50-year-old man driving a Mustang and one of the newer ones, you immediately assume that he owns a strip club, right?
Interesting. What about bald man, little dick? What car is that? You know what I mean? The compensating car.
It's probably a. It's probably a around Auckland. It's probably a. It'll be like a 2008 to 2012 Mercedes C-Class coupe.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it'll be the V8 one. You know.
Yeah. Good. Well, actually, first thing that comes to mind of cars and the archetype, like, I can tell a lot by a person's dog, by who they are.
Totally.
Yeah. What about a car? What are some cars that you're like, this is this kind of person?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, you can kind of immediately tell it. It's
like black BMW. Are they going to wait for you at the lights?
So if I said to you a brand new Audi RS6 wagon.
So Soccer mom? No, I don't actually know. I don't know cars. So.
No, soccer mom's in a Range Rover.
Okay. Okay, I don't know. I should like get a resident expert to like go back and forth with you. So maybe you tell us, or maybe you had the listeners guess, and then you tell us, because I'm not going to get the guess right.
Do you know any soccer moms? Get some on the phone and just get them down to the studio and see what they drive.
Yeah, we'll ask them. We'll do a survey purely just... Yeah, because I got that amount of time. It's good. No, you're right. That's what the world needs. Judgment based on cars. What?
Oh, there's so much judgment based on cars. Well, go on, that's the thing. It's absolutely hilarious.
You had the floor. I think the Toyota Camry. What does that say about
it? I think it's probably... You know what? The Toyota Camry is an incredibly sensible choice of car.
Okay.
Yeah. So right. I'd probably go, that person's actually pretty sensible.
All right. Yeah. Wolf in sheep's clothes, it's called by the cops.
Oh, yeah. You think about it, you could literally do anything in a Camry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably like... Can confirm. Like Jeffrey Dahmer probably drove a Camry, right?
Because well, let's not get weird about it.
No one takes any notice of it whatsoever.
No, I mean, I don't think that's a just comparison. Just, you know, bit of feedback if you're running for office. I don't think you should compare me to serial killer.
I've been thinking about this running for office thing.
Have you?
And I've actually got quite a lot on over the next few years, and I don't feel like I'd be able to commit my all to the country. And I think the country deserves the best.
Yeah, no, good call. Yeah. Otherwise, you would have won. Okay, using your headhunting skills, how would you get the ministers of your whatever it's called, cabinet? I don't know, politics.
I think that's actually a really, really interesting question, because logically you would think, or ostensibly, oof, you're thinking this guy is going to say... I'll just go and find leaders in business and go and headhunt all of them and, you know, put together the brightest minds in business because, you know, after all, the country's a bloody P&L and should be run like a business, which is what you'll hear a lot of pay or stay or mail people saying over lunch and that sort of thing. But because everyone's very, very upset by this idea that, you know, the people that end up running the country are career politicians.
Mm.
So it's almost like, so we've got somebody doing this thing that they've spent their lifetime studying. That's not on. Hold on. That doesn't make sense in itself. It's like saying that guy that's practicing medicine that went to university for years to learn anatomy he's not the one that should be cutting everyone up.
Interesting.
But isn't it though?
Let me ask,
let me ask you this.
Oh, go on then. He's got the floor now.
Right.
I don't think you need power. It's already gone to your head.
No, gosh, there's no power in my head. I'm not smart enough to wield it.
That's aren't you? Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, I have lots of in my head, but no. I keep it at bay.
No, look, I really am a simple man. And
could have fooled me.
The art of learning stuff is to have a really smart wife. Who is in tune with media and politics and those sorts of things.
Well played. So, what's your question? Sorry, yeah.
How would you, I'm going to put that one back on you. How would you choose your cabinet?
Well, I'm going to extrapolate from when I recruited salespeople.
Mm.
First thing I look for is, can our vision accommodate theirs? So ask them what they're trying to achieve in life. Second thing I look for is values. Do they take responsibility for their actions? Are they authentic? And do they have empathy? The next thing is, how do you get them to demonstrate competency? So you might have a recent problem in cabinet, whatever the fuck. You throw it at them. How would you deal with it? What would you do? And then you'd need some reassurance around their credibility. But I would hire more on vision and values and also passion for the certain role that I'm trying to provide, and then a demonstration of competency. But I don't know the competency bit that well. I don't know how you know.
I don't know how you know either. My wife's uncle and her father have been, you know, involved with, you know, working with prime ministers to help them, you know, choose and recruit MPs and those sorts of things. And it seems to be more about their ability to bring in the people that they need to achieve the things that need to be achieved.
Because
if you think about it, if I bring you into politics and I go, right, I'm giving you roading and you've got You've got about a solid 18 months to achieve everything we need you to achieve, because then we're on the road to getting reelected. And that's going to take, you know, that's going to take us a year. So go and figure out what's happening in that department, put together a bit of a plan, and then you've got a year to work on that before we need to start making more promises and, you know, hitting the campaign road. And in that, there's an underlying issue, and that is that our political term is half of what it should be. It's not long enough. Spend too much time getting in, figuring out where everything is, you know, because basically someone goes, hey, the Beehive, here's your office. Yeah, cool. Helen over there makes the tea, and if you need to speak to the police for any reason, then probably talk to that guy, and if you need to speak to Wayne Brown, I wouldn't bother. No one knows how to get hold of him, and you know, like, it's so you have to go in and figure out, right, cool, shit, we made all these promises. Can we actually keep them? So you spend a year figuring that out. Then you spend a year trying to do, you know, all your best stuff on that. And, you know, politicians do good stuff and they work hard. They're just not very good in New Zealand at going, shit, I lied, or I made it up and I'm really sorry.
What do you think, because I've seen the political playbook, blame that person, avoid responsibility, which I'm not very good at being around that, Ed. Because the approach I would have gone, like, I never thought about recruitment, but I would be thinking, how do I enable people that are outside of my group that go against the incentive of what I need? So how do I mobilize the collective instead of just the party? And how do we make it more long vision? And that will require navigating treachery. That will require giving them support at the expense of your party, being hated by your team. It will be a fucking mess, mate.
It does seem like a very, very convoluted system that's based on a series of bureaucrats that seem to rely a lot, from what I can see, right, on good old-fashioned cronyism, you know?
Cronyism.
I will just bring my mate Wayne in for that. He's run a couple of successful businesses. He'll sort that all out. Yeah, he wants 800 grand a year and some you know, considerations. Let's get him in to do it. You know,
there's 800 grand a year.
And this is what I see. Oh, and then some. And then some. The political spend on, you know, consultants and, you know, contractors and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. It's probably like Liberia's deficit. You know, we just spend that quite freely on, oh, get Wayno in because he used to run bloody, you know,
some big company.
He was a CEO that I know. Of Ray White for years. So he knows tons about property. Get him in, you know. Like all that kind of stuff.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton of that going on. Because how could there not be? If you look at heads of business and you look at, you know, so somebody rang me the other day and said, do you want to come to a cocktail party at a National MP's house? There'll be heads of business and there'll be, you know, celebrities and I always love it when people say celebrities in New Zealand. I'm like, who's it gonna be?
You Chris know? Warner, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
That's all there is. It's the pinnacle, eh? Shortland Street. Where do you go from there?
Oh, I know, right? Where do you go?
My favorite thing was where they cut a scene. It was a cliffhanger and it was because someone walked around a corner into someone holding a knife and they died. It's beautiful. Yeah, no, beautifully written. But
if you were going to walk into someone with a knife, you'd want to already be in a hospital, right? That is an opportune place for it to happen.
That's true. It's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're in some garage.
Call me a doctor. Oh, you're already here. Okay, cool. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's quite comforting, really.
Yeah.
You know, we're having these serious chats. I think people are really confident in your recruiting ability after this podcast. I think you really demonstrated that. What do you think?
I don't think we've spoken about recruitment at all. And in fact, I thought we were just warming up the microphones and that was about to start.
Oh, should we?
You have lured me into a false sense of security.
Well, no one gives a fuck about what you do, no offense. But what they care about is, are you the right man to solve their problem? Because you sell an intangible thing. And you can't conceptualize that in content.
I have a fundamental belief that, which pretty much shapes my entire professional being, which is that the entire career thing, the whole job thing, the headhunting thing, the recruitment thing, is that we've all totally and utterly forgotten that we want to appeal, attract, educate, and ultimately recruit a really, really magnificent human. Mm. And no one will deviate from that. Every single person I have ever gone and met in business has said to me, man, we need to hire, you know, we need to attract and hire the best people in the market. They all say that. And I go, okay, what are you going to do about it? Oh, chucking out on Seek. And then maybe only talk to 6 or 7 of them and just ignore the rest. And then, you know, and if we don't get anyone out of that, gosh, what will we do then? Hey, can you ask your neighbor what he's doing? Like, it's... If the same amount of effort was applied by businesses to marketing themselves and selling their business and their culture to the candidate market and ultimately going and treating those people like humans and talking to them in a human fashion, like on the phone and inviting them in and engaging with them and you know, making them feel special, then, you know, they would be utterly successful at it. It's like they spend all this time and energy on you know, on our offering and our sales and our whole thing. And show me a business that has been successful just by advertising.
You know, it's a leaky pipe.
It is. You know, like you might get someone like Juicy, you know, like a car rental company might say, oh, we've advertised everyone, we're massively successful in that. Our incoming leads are intense. Well, okay, so stop answering the phone. Stop talking to people and see how successful you are then. But more importantly, candidates, and let's call them humans, are really sick of being fed what you think is great and cool and neat about your company and this exciting opportunity for a superstar to join our business in this key role that offers challenge and culture and a chair by the window. Fuck off. People are so... Like, when was the last time you watched TV to see the advertising on TV? Like, fucking never. And yet, you know, we want you to go to this website and we want you to apply to our ad and we want you to do it with a cover letter by the 30th of September and we'll only contact people that that we deem good enough.
That's interesting, eh? Because I think of advertising as a, like, if you give something for value in exchange for information, then you follow up. But that's not really done in the Seek world.
No, it's not. And candidates are sick of it. Humans are sick of it, you know?
Let's innovate. I know you do the outreach thing directly in advertising. I get that, the hustle on their behalf, because, you know, they can't do some simple thing like click, click, hello.
Mm.
And I don't think either of us should exist, no offense, but...
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt.
They just do it.
Yeah, like the reality is it's not lost on me that you know... That what I actually do, when you look at the practical theory, or the practical actual of what I do, is absolutely something that any of my clients could do themselves.
Yeah.
But the key thing is knowledge, and knowledge is power. And if you know in your industry segment who the absolute best people are, because you've taken 19 years to figure that out, then it's tapping into that knowledge that's really, really key. And, you know, it's the same reason why people say, oh, you know, people are poor and they haven't got any money and there's only a certain, you know, segment of society that have got money and have invested and all this kind of stuff. Well, that's because they went and found an investment advisor that absolutely knew how to make money. You give me 20 grand and in 5 years it'll be 100. And we'll just keep systematically doing that. And you'll retire with 5 million, you know? And... That's just smart.
Yeah.
It's just smart. You bring in a learned professional person that can provide you with knowledge and guidance and make sure that you don't make a mistake, and voila, your life is peachy.
Yeah, I would say it like, what's the most leverage activity you can do in your business? And I see you would be leaps and bounds because you're doing a repetition on a specific niche for a specific amount of time at a volume that most people wouldn't. So that gives you, you're ahead of the game. Whereas what I would look at is like, how do I buy that skill or hire that skill so then we have the capacity as a business to do what you do? You know what I mean? Because it fundamentally is your clients can't be fucked. Is fundamentally what it is. Not to name and shame.
I love that. It's totally that. Yeah. It's totally that. And the entire recruitment industry is built on the premise that we've got a whole team of people doing this thing that you don't have time for.
Yeah.
It's absolutely that. It's outsourcing.
Yeah.
Outsourcing a business process.
And it, like, even like, let's say marketing, because it's kind of what I'm doing. Let's say if you just had 100 outreaches, either call, email, message, or spend $100 on ads, or made 100 minutes of content every day, seven days a week, no matter what, and your product wasn't dog shit, you would solve your acquisition problem.
Glad
in 2 months.
You qualified that. Yeah.
Well, it's important, huh?
Yeah, it's totally important. It really is now because consumers are getting smarter.
Yeah. Well, and then you talk about as well, like, so candidates or humans. Like, they're the most valuable asset in your organization, but they're treated like the biggest cost.
Mm.
Isn't that crazy? It's like, so if I just hire someone that's exceptional, and let's use an example. If I can cold call 100 people a day, and I can close a certain amount because I do it enough. So what if I hire someone else and they're not that good, but then I hire 10 of them, and they're doing fucking, 1,000 of the calls I would have done. Or I hire someone that's really good at hiring salespeople. So I turned my 100 calls a day to get that person who's getting all these other people that are making 10,000, well, making 1,000 calls a day that I couldn't.
That's a lot of calls.
It is a lot of calls.
It is a lot of calls.
We'd call all of New Zealand 10 times in a...
Yeah, man.
Call the same ones 10 times.
Yeah. I know I rang you just before, and the good news is I'm going to keep calling you until you say yes.
They respect it, eh?
Eventually. Yeah. Hey, let me ask you about this, right?
Oh, go on.
The cold call.
Mm.
Someone ringing up, hi, Ryan. I'm Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy.
I've got a great business idea for you. I'd like to share a couple of examples of how we've been very successful with people just like you. How's Wednesday at 2 p.m.? Or you know what? I could also do Thursday at 10. So, I've told you just enough to let you know that I've got success. I've given you the alternative clothes there. I've given you two options to make you feel like you're in control.
Yeah. Optional clothes, I like
that. Yeah, that sort of thing. Hey, you're in control, Mr. Client.
Hey,
I'm coming to see you, but I'll let you decide when. It's that sort of thing. But the glorious, gorgeous, nerve-inducing cold call.
Mm.
What's happened to it, Ryan? Do you think that it is an archaic business practice that has literally been turned into fossil and prehistoric ash in the same way that those giant lizards we once called dinosaurs are? Or do you think it's the more that technology tries to replace it in sales, the more relevant it will in fact become? I've given you two extremes there.
Yeah, no, you have.
Mm.
I think we're in the business of relationships.
Yes.
So it's all about how you facilitate that, and there's always going to be some means of that. So it's either there's a call, there's a video, there's a text. So I can't see it ever changing.
Mm.
It's just that's the whole game. How do you facilitate the relationship in a way that earns trust? And everyone sucks at cold calling, to be honest. They don't do enough, and they don't give value, and they don't care about what the other person is saying.
Yeah.
They're just pitching at them, doing alternative closes. Next!
Or trying to bamboozle them with words, because they're nervous, so they just go at it,
Yeah,
And it's so you're just kind of bludgeoning the other person, and they just go, no, don't know that. It's the best thing to do is ring someone and just ask them a question,
Take an interest. Well, I think people underplay the value of taking an interest in someone. They pay $100 an hour to a therapist to listen to them. But if you had a comment to me, didn't take any interest in me and said, hey, you're successful, I wouldn't believe you. And then you said alternative clothes, I'd be like, I'll probably people please it. But okay, let me think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't, but that's what people do.
Yeah. And it's the biggest lie. It's the biggest lie in the book, Oh, yeah, the check's in the mail, It's
the check's in the bank account, or it didn't count?
Or it's like, oh, yeah, that went to my, yeah, oh, that, no, oh, that went to my junk folder, I think. Yeah, whatever. So.
Yeah, I love smoking that out. I mean, like, oh,
man.
It's okay to say no. I want you to say, can you say, practice with me? Say no. No. No.
Ryan, I can't do it. Yeah. No, it's, I think the cold call is a fascinating piece of business interaction that
it's fun.
Yeah. I always love that scene in Wolf of Wall Street when he's surrounded by all those guys and he makes a cold call to the guy and he's doing all the he's just taking the guy through the motions and they all celebrate and high five afterwards. And I mean, I have worked in environments like that as a commission only contractor, much like, you pointed out that you'd done yourself earlier. You know, you do those early years on the street or on the phone, and you never really lose that. Like for me, if there's a problem with a client, get them on the phone. Oh, here's a candidate's name. Great. Let's call them immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's just engage. It's there's no second thought. I might stop and think, what do I actually need to say to this guy? Or, what's in it for him? Because I love that.
Yeah. There's actually, I think where sales should go is the steal from psychology is motivational interviewing. Have you heard of it?
Interesting.
Have you heard of motivational?
Yes. So you're bringing that up. That's really cool.
Yeah, because you think about, so essentially what it was used was to convince addicts to not be addicted. But ask them questions that empowers them to come to their own realizations and take steps. So all I see sales is one, caring about the other person more than they care about themselves.
Yeah.
Getting a decision, and it might not be with you.
Mm.
And then how do you ask a line of questioning where they come to the realization themselves and they're empowered by that and you're just enabling that? If I used to do the whole pitch thing, you fucking call up, pitch, and then I used to think of my dead dog, so I sound sad because I didn't give a fuck about what I was selling back then, which was charity, which is a little fucked up. But
yeah, no, of course.
I'll talk about kids with cancer, but I just couldn't get there, so I'd think of my dog dying because we were taking so much of the revenue.
It is the worst thing, eh? It really is. Losing a dog, far out.
Oh, that's all right.
Mm.
I mean, I would not want to live if there was no death. Because it adds meaning to the time that we're here. It's kind of like an assignment with no end. You wouldn't do it.
I feel like we've come full circle and now we're back at the...
the start.
Because that's the whole fascinating point, isn't it? So if life is uniquely yours, isn't it yours to decide when it's off and over?
Mm.
You know? I mean, it's bloody sad for everyone around you, right? I mean, in some cases, devastating. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, yeah. And for, you know, some of the people around you, that'll go on to define a range of feelings and emotions for them for the rest of their life. So you kind of have that consideration. Then you start going, well, hold on, is it that responsibility and, you know, love and devotion for them and their well-being and safety that I should minimalize my own feelings? And, you know, like this is the whole fascinating conundrum. And then people say the universe is bigger than we can comprehend and it's continuing to expand. And I go, right, who should we cancel next? This is the crazy thing about all of it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting, I think, at 46, people say to me all the time, they're like, so tell me your deep insights on business. So I'm like, man, I don't even know what's happening with the world or the universe. Like everything is, I do know one thing. When I stopped, when I set myself some parental controls over what, you know, what was coming in into my phone and computer. No, I'm you know, seriously, when over COVID, I went, everything is bad. Jeremy must stop listening to bad things and believing bad things. So I just stopped. I just focused on my tiny little, you know, area of kind of, I guess, control or influence, and just went, stop worrying about all that and just do you, boo, you know?
So you took the blue pill.
I did. And almost some of the Powerade. No, it's a little bit of Powerade. But no, look, it's you know, I think in the thing is that it's kind of like, you know, where does it end? You know, people have been saying to me for a lot of businesses, AI is the end for them, you know?
Hmm.
But I think it's...
You know what the end is?
Tell me.
Now. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure.